Crackheads, it's Friday. It can only mean one thing. That's right. It's the crack, baby. July 4th tomorrow, big old celebration of America. Congratulations, America, 250, huh? Oh, yeah. What a country, what a time to be alive. I love America. I love all my American friends. I love freedom. You know what I'm saying? Enjoy your freedom. Enjoy all your freedoms tomorrow. What a beautiful time. You have the World Cup going on over there, and we're just 1 week away from International Fight Week, UFC 329. Oh yeah, it's coming. It's coming in hot. I'm very excited, you know? I'm already packing my bags, guys. I'm ready to go. I have bought a book that Ben Folks recommended, The Sisters Brothers. I think that's what it's called. It's not called The Brothers Sisters, is it? No, it's The Sisters Brothers. I've also downloaded a new game for my Nintendo Switch. Will I be brave enough to take my Switch out of the bag and play it in public as a near 40-year-old man? I honestly don't know yet. I'm going to see how I feel. I'm going to see who's sitting around me and see how much they'd judge me if I was to take said Nintendo Switch out of the bag. We're going to do today, like not a crazy weekend for combat sports. So today we're going to look at our half-year awards. They're up on Uncrowned now. Me and the great Ben Folks are going to take you through that. Chuck Mendenhall off partying, of course, down in Talladega here. Shirtless, slamming beers. I mean, I've said too much already, but it's the kind of life he leads. Everyone thinks he's so sophisticated with that big old brain under that hat. You know, they think he's so, so sophisticated, but no. Massive NASCAR fan, shotguns, beers. Loves freedom more than most, I'd say. Before I bring in beautiful Ben Folks, who has got his own plans this weekend, I might add, let's hear from our lovely friends over at Kalshi. This episode is sponsored by Kalshi, the largest prediction market in the United States. Here's what makes Kalshi different. You are not playing against a house. Kalshi is peer-to-peer trading. You buy yes or no contracts on whether something will happen, and you're trading directly against other users. Think of it like buying or selling a stock. The line isn't set by some algorithm working against you. Public opinion sets the price. Kalshi is CFTC approved, federally regulated, which is why it's available all across the country, including California and Texas. Download the Kalshi app and use code CRAIC, that's C-R-A-I-C, to get $10 off when you trade $10. K-A-L-S-H-I. Kalshi, trade what's next. Ah, there we go. Let's bring in beautiful Ben Folks. Ben Folks, congratulations. You did it. 250 years. What do you got to say for yourself?
Thank you for giving me the credit I finally deserve for at last. For 250 years of the American Republic. You know, I'm glad to see you getting in the spirit. I like to think that there are various American things that we have sort of infected you with from afar. Just because, like the NFL being the prime example. We've got you staying up late at night to watch the NFL, which I don't think ever would be, have been a part of your life had you not just come into close contact and become friends with so many Americans. And now I hope that you will set off a small explosion somewhere in Dublin to celebrate the 4th of July this weekend. I'm very excited to hear that you're going to be reading The Sisters Brothers. It is The Sisters Brothers. That is the title, by the big homie Patrick DeWitt, one of my favorite still working novelists. Guy can't write a bad book. Sisters Brothers, the funniest one he's got. I think you really want to throw your seatmates into a state of confusion. It's just alternate back and forth between this, you know, high literary contemporary novel and playing games on your Switch. And they'll just be like looking out of the corner of their eye being like, what do I even make of this guy? He's a Renaissance man. On one hand, he's reading books, he's reading novels. And on the other hand, he has the whimsical spirit of a child out here just playing handheld video games like an 11-year-old who mom and dad are trying to keep occupied in the backseat.
It's a 10-hour flight to Dallas alone. And then I get off the plane in Dallas. I have 90 minutes. And then it's like 3 hours on a plane from Dallas to beautiful Sin City. I mean, you're going to have to keep me occupied there. I mean, I'm...
You'll start crying otherwise.
I cry all the time. Do you know what I mean? I can't... If I have nothing to do, if I haven't had enough sugar, if I'm hungry, and Elaine's not there to give me food, I mean, what is going to happen? They have to keep me occupied. I got Red Dead Redemption, which will kind of meld in with the Sisters Brothers, I believe, as well. It is a Western book, am I correct?
It is, yeah.
So, I mean...
Those two go really well together. I mean, look, are you going to look ridiculous grown man playing a Switch? Yes. Yes, absolutely. What I'm saying is make your peace with that now. Oh, yeah. That's fine. You know what? Just so what? People are going to be like, who is this guy? But they're also, there's a part of them that's going to be a little jealous. Somebody's going to see that Switch and they're going to be like, I can't believe this grown man is playing a Nintendo Switch on a plane. Damn, though, it's a good idea. I wish I'd brought one. Kind of makes the time go a lot faster. It's perfect. I think you need to put aside your natural inclination to worry about what other people are thinking of you. You need to leave that at home in Dublin, my man.
Oh.
Don't take it with you.
Oh, believe me, there's going to be lots of people telling me how they feel about me next week out of UFC 329. There's no doubt about that. And speaking of UFC 329, our good friends at Kalshi have got some markets up on UFC 329, I believe, Andy, do they? The old Conor McGregor v. Max Holloway. Let's have a look at this. Holloway, 63% trading Holloway, 37% trading McGregor. We are going to talk about this at the back of the show because McGregor put out an interesting interview with McLoyf yesterday, I believe me and Ben have both seen it. And of course, there is that Paddy the Baddy v. Benoit Saint-Denis, which I think is a fantastically matched fight. I went back and watched these fights, and I'm not surprised that it's this close. 55% trading for Saint-Denis, who is definitely riding the momentum coming into this, and 45% for Paddy the Baddy, whose performance against Gaethje has aged pretty well. Considering what happened against Ilya at the White House. Wouldn't you say, Ben? Like, is that fair to say? Like, considering what we were saying?
Well, I mean, the thing is, Gaethje looked much better against Ilya Topuria than he did against Paddy Pimblett. He won both fights, but he looked significantly better in the more recent one. And I don't necessarily know what to attribute that to. Paddy really had some moments where he looked bad in that fight. Moments where especially since Gaethje wasn't fighting his best fight, there were moments where you were like, man, if Paddy was just a little bit better at this, he could win right now. And he took a pretty good beating. I'll be interested to see how he bounces back from that, like physically and confidence wise. But it did show us, I think, some of the limitations of Paddy Pimblett, at least at this point.
Yeah, no, I think that's fair. And Paddy is a guy who, like, when he was on the regional scene here, Ben, like, nobody even thought he could get out of that. Like, nobody thought he was going to leave Cage Warriors. There was all this kind of stuff. Then he gets to the UFC. It was like, oh, well, he's never going to beat anyone any good. And then he obviously, look, he had the promotional rocket ship strapped to his back. There's no doubt about that. But, like, you know, then it was, he'll never beat a ranked guy. He gets into the rankings. He beats Chandler. Then it was, you know, here comes Gaethje. And yeah, they were right about that one. But when you consider what Gaethje's done this year, and this is a fantastic segue into our half-year awards, and maybe we should start there right at the top of these awards, if you wouldn't mind that, Ben, because our fighter of the half-year, as voted for by our wonderful staff at Uncrowned, is Mr. Justin Gaethje. And would you look at who wrote this segment, huh? It's a very handsome man from Montana, who lives in Montana, should I say. Ben, tell us why Justin Gaethje is the fighter of the half year.
Well, first of all, you're the king of segues. Everybody knows that. Everybody could see that for themselves. I really think that there's no argument to be made for anybody but Justin Gaethje. Because if you consider in the first 6 months, he won two different UFC title fights, two different versions of the UFC lightweight title. He was an underdog in both fights. I always thought it was crazy that he was an underdog to Paddy Pimblett and said so at the time and was proven right. But I thought for sure Ilya Topuria was going to show that he deserved to be such a huge favorite over Justin Gaethje. A lot of people were looking at that one going, Justin Gaethje would be lucky to make it out of the first round. And he goes in there and beats the previously unbeaten champion who everybody thought was just going to absolutely dog walk him. And he does it at the White House in the main event of the most watched UFC event. And that right there, if he had just done that, that would probably have been enough. But to do that just a few months after winning the interim title against Paddy Pimblett, and at 37 to finally capture the undisputed UFC lightweight title, which previously I think we felt like was going to be a thing he chased and yes, never quite caught.
Absolutely.
That's just how we thought the story was going for him was just sort of like, okay, hey, he, you know, we've already seen the high watermark of Justin Gaethje's career. And so to come in and do that at this age, on that level, at that platform, that right there has to make him the top fighter of the half year.
You have in the honorable mentions here, Sean Strickland, Joshua Van, Carlos Ulbrich. Were any of those guys close in your estimation? Was there any deliberation for you?
You know, Joshua Van, I think that, especially because Joshua Van, I think you also could make an argument that he and Tatsuya Taira are right behind Gaethje and Ilia Topuria for having the best fight of the half year. Like that, he, him winning that title and people in that freak fashion, and then people were going, well, I don't know if we believe it yet. And then having that fight against Tatsuya Taira, that was a great fight and a great moment for him. It just doesn't quite rise to the same level as Justin Gaethje, you know, winning it late in his career, winning it at this White House event and winning it while such a heavy, heavy underdog. That is a little bit. Sean Strickland, the thing he has going for him really is that everybody was talking about Khamzat like he was an indestructible machine.
Yeah.
He was just an unstoppable force and was going to blaze through everybody in the middleweight division. Now, I still think the decision was a little bit debatable on that one. But to be able to go out there and prove that entire narrative wrong, I don't think any of us saw that coming. So that was a big one for him.
Ulbrich, is it just that performance in a nutshell, how absolutely wild that was? Like, watching this guy at the time, you're going, nah, like, this is over. This is, there's a matter of time mm-hmm. before this is finished. And then it does finish, but not in the way we expected. Is it just that performance that puts him in the mix there?
Yeah, because that was incredible. Yeah. To be able to go out there clearly on one leg and knock a dude out to win the light heavyweight title, that was something where we could all see it and go, if this makes it to the end of the round and he has to go sit down off on the stool and then get up off the stool, there's no way. You know, he has to find a way to pull off a Hail Mary knockout here before this round ends, while somehow also not getting picked apart now that we all see him limping around like a wounded gazelle. You know, he looks like lion food at that moment. And to turn that all around and be able to win that, it just kind of reminds you that there's some part of me that almost hates it when that happens, because we've seen this before, right? Where a fighter is down on the scorecards, he's getting beat, and he just comes back with one great punch late in the fight and wins it. And you go, well, now this will be the justification for so many people who go, don't stop my fight. Let me keep going as long as I still have a chance. And this is one where it's like, clearly, if he was playing in a NBA playoff game and he did that to his knee, they'd call timeout and they'd get him out of the game and he'd go back in the back and get an MRI. And that's just not an option in this sport. You got to make the most of it. You got to make the best of it in that time. And to like, this is the sort of thing where it never goes this way. It always goes the other way. Guy gets injured and we go, well, it's a shame. It's a bummer it had to happen now, but you're in trouble and you're going to have to figure it out. And to be able to actually pull that out and win that is incredible.
Before we move on, how confident would you be to say that nobody can surpass Gaethje by the end of the year here? Like, I mean, if you think about it, if we're looking at next weekend, like Holloway or McGregor, depending on who wins the fight, despite that fight happening on 170, would you be all too surprised if Armin Sarukian got once again pushed to the side and they decided to put either Max, who has obviously history with Gaethje, that unbelievable knockout at UFC 300, or McGregor, if he manages to win, would you be all too surprised if the UFC did the old, see you later, Armin, we'll...
No. Yeah. I would not be surprised at all, especially the way that they've done Armin in the past. So that doesn't seem like it's out of the realm of possibility. You know, to hear Conor McGregor tell it, the UFC already has the next in mind for him, and it's not until 2027. I mean, maybe that could be moved up. Who knows? I could see something. If Max Holloway went in there and beat Conor McGregor, you're right. He could turn around and say, hey, look, I've knocked out the current UFC lightweight champ. Give me another shot at that one. And I could see something like that happening. That might do it for Max Holloway. I don't know, though. Just the White House event itself was such a spectacle that is going to be hard to top. And it brought in viewers that are just not going to watch normal UFC events, probably. And to be in that position And to be that big of an underdog and pull out the win, I do think that's going to be hard to beat.
Yeah, I would agree with you. And just so unprecedented. And as well, like, you have all the iconography with the walkout, everything like that. Like, it's really, really. And on this, the year of the 250th anniversary of the American Republic, how the hell could you not put Justin Gaethje on top of that list? We have knockout of the half year next. And that was me. And it was pretty, like, as soon as I knew I was on that category, it just went bing. Yeah. Just had to check to make sure it was a knockout very quickly before. But it's Alexa Grasso v. Macy Barber, their second meeting. And just, it is technically a knockout, but I know a lot of people's last image of this is Alexa Grasso hanging off Macy Barber's neck. But if you can remember what was happening in the lead up to this fight, it was like Alexa Grasso coming off two losses, the Valentina Shevchenko dethroning, all but forgotten, the well-rounded performance that saw her dethrone Valentina Shevchenko, that is. And you had Macy Barber, who suddenly feels like she's having her moment. We always knew Macy would get to this stage. We always knew that she had heavy hands. And here's Alexa, who will likely trade with her. This is one of the most beautiful displays of mixed martial arts I've ever seen in my life, and I'd argue until the day I die, I will remember this moment and the feeling it gave me. I can remember in the aftermath of seeing her land this 1-2 with the left hand doing the damage, which spins Macy Barber around to the point where she's sitting down in front of the standing Alexa Grasso and she jumps on her. I said like a jockey. I don't even think it was like a jockey. It was more like some kind of apex predator, and she's just fully, like, immediately in a fully locked rear naked choke. And just to see the lifelessness in Macy, just one of the most amazing things I've ever seen. My honorable mentions, before I get bent away on this, were Carlos Ulbrich, who we just mentioned, Uros Medic, which was a sick knockout of Jeff Neal at UFC Houston, Gregory Rodriguez against Bruno Ferreira, that was that big right hand that just poleaxed him, left him sleeping, and then Sosa Vioki. Tell me, Ben, would you have gone for Alexa Grasso here, or who would you have gone for?
No, I think you got to go with the Alexa Grasso one. You're right that people see that still image from it that made the rounds, and if they didn't see the fight, they'd be like, how are you telling me this was the knockout of the year? That person is clearly in a chokehold. You know, they're locked in an RNC. How is that a knockout? And he went, you had to see it. It's also the kind of thing, you had to see it, because if you just tried to describe that sequence to someone, they're not going to believe you. They're not. Like, it's hard to imagine if you didn't see it. It's hard to, like, visualize how something like that could even happen. It kind of shows you that no matter how much MMA you've seen, you haven't seen all the possible combinations of weird stuff that can happen in this sport. If something like that happened, you just went, whoa, that's crazy. Never seen that before. Watched thousands of fights. Never seen anything like that before. That was just an incredible moment. So yeah, I think you got to go there.
Yeah, I mean, the same as we said previously about Gaethje. I do not see that. Like, I mean, at the very end of the year, something crazy would have to happen for Alexa to not get the knockout of the year, as far as I'm concerned. Drake Riggs, the great Drake Riggs, the picks king of Uncrowned, came in with the submission of the half year, I believe. Let me double check. Yes, it is. And it was Alice Ardeline and against Pollyanna Viana. And the capsule lock, which is very, very rare, incredibly rare. And do you know what kind of struck me about Alice winning this award? I can remember when she was making her debut, it was a short notice call up against Shauna Bannon, and the talk about Alice was, oh my god, this is an OnlyFans girl, this is complete novelty, this person has no skill set whatsoever, the only marketing behind this woman is the fact that she is OnlyFans. I can remember Shauna from Ireland, of course, I was talking to her in the lead up, and she was like, that is such bullshit, you know, like, this is absolutely ridiculous. In the industry that we're in, and the paychecks we're getting, you're going to criticize someone for trying to make some money on the side, it's absolutely mental. But if anything shut those people up, it's this elaborate capsule lock on Pollyanna Viana. And I can remember as it happened, Ben, I was confused. You know, it's rare, like, mm-hmm. I haven't trained for as long as you, but I've trained for a long time, and you see freaky shit on the mats all the time. Like, basically, there's always one dude who trains jiu-jitsu who's trying to do the most elaborate shit that will never come off. But there's one guy who's like, I want to show you this. I didn't know what the fuck was going on when Ardeline hit that. And honestly, it still takes a look. If I see that finish now on video, I'm like, hang on, let me have a quick look. I mean, really, really cool, and a really, like, silence the critics kind of technique, as far as I'm concerned, from Alice.
you're right that there is always the jujitsu guy. He's like the jujitsu equivalent of the yoga person who insists on standing on their head, even though nobody told him to do that. You know, like there's always that guy. And especially, and the thing that that has in common with this is that that guy will often be trying to do some stuff that he saw on Instagram. You know, he'll be like, he saw it work in an Instagram video. And he's like, hold on. No, I'm going to do this thing. And it's one thing that I've learned in jiu-jitsu gyms over the years is if somebody is out there being like, let me show you this thing I saw on the internet. You go, nope, show it on somebody else.
Yeah.
You're not showing it on me. This is how Big John McCarthy is telling you. This is how he injured his neck really badly and had to have, was it just like somebody was like, let me show you this thing. And he's like, all right, go ahead, do it on me so I can feel it. And it's a mistake. This too, one of the best ways to get somebody with a submission is to get them with a submission they haven't seen before and don't even know that they should be looking out for. Like that's why jiu-jitsu works so great in the early UFCs, worked so much better in those UFCs than it does in more recent UFCs, because now everybody's seen all the moves. Everybody, and one of the things you learn from training jiu-jitsu is like your brain sends out a little warning in certain positions, in certain situations where you go, danger zone here. Need to watch out. Need to keep my arms in close. Need to protect my neck here. And this is one where even an experienced grappler is not feeling the danger in time, not realizing that that danger exists until it's too late and you're stuck. So that was pretty cool.
Yeah. And I really like Drake's honorable mentions, particularly the Adriano Moraes against Pumi Nakuta, because it's such a controversial one as well. The rear naked choke, the buzzer beater, which has been the subject of great discourse, and Herb Dean, who we'll get to later, who is not enjoying a nice time at the moment. He also has Asu Alamboyev against Charles Johnson, quite recent, of course, the Sulev stretch, and Murtazali Magomedov against Melsic Bagdasarian, the Scottish twister, Stevie Ray's signature move. All great choices there from the great Drake Riggs. Fight of the half year, it's Drake Riggs once again, and it is, I mean, I think you know what it probably is, it is Justin Gaethje v. Ilya Topuria v. Justin Gaethje, should I say, giving the champion his rightful place at the front of that. This is, right, this is one thing I'll say. Greg is not here to bat back at me, and I don't necessarily disagree with this, but I think in the aftermath of this fight, people look back on it, and they think about the beating that Ilya Topuria took. They don't quite remember the work he was doing. The second round in particular, the body shots, when you're just like, it's completely fine to just exit this fight now, Justin. It's fine.
Yeah.
You know, most people would just say, you know what? Fuck this. And you actually wrote a piece this week about that kind of, this quitting debate. And sometimes you see fighters, not so obviously quit, but like in a situation where you're eating hook after hook after hook to the body, and you're seeing the air leave their face. You're seeing like there's nothing left in this. I'm barely hanging on here. And then Justin Gaethje somehow comes back and he wins this fight. It is tremendous. And the backdrop and everything to do with this fight obviously adds to it. The walkout, everything. But That was one of those pure adrenaline moments. And the kind of whole fight night was like that, but this was the perfect climax, the perfect moment where you're kind of, as a guy like Ben, I've watched so many fights, they can become absolutely, they just become generic after a while, but this was so spectacular. And like, I'm nearly catching my breath just watching this. I think it's a fantastic choice from Drake Riggs is what I'm trying to say. And I know I fumbled the beginning of that entry and I apologize, Drake, but basically, I've come around to say, yeah, great choice, Drake.
You're right, though, to point out the body shots, because it's not often we see somebody kind of shrug those off. Yeah. Usually, it's a lasting feeling. You know, you take a really bad body shot that drops you, and usually you don't just take a second, bounce right back up and go, all right, I'm so good. Like, usually you get hit again in that spot and you're going to fold right up again. And Justin Gaethje has kind of toughed his way through that. I still think Ilya Topuria probably kicking himself a little bit for how he chose to go about finishing that one, where he followed him to the ground, tried to go for a submission there instead of just continuing to strike. But that was really impressive just because to bounce back from that and then to look fantastic in the very next round and be really taking it to Ilia Topuria. That really shows, like, Justin, that was the most Justin Gaethje way to win that fight, was to just have to, like, gut his way through some tough stuff and then also be standing right in there in close quarters throwing bombs afterward.
And it's also, like, I think we discussed this before the fight. It's the only way Justin Gaethje could win this fight. Like, meet this man in a place that he'd never been before and be like, oh, yeah, here's my couch. I have beers in the fridge. I'm very comfy, you know what I mean? And Ilya's like, oh, man, I'm not wearing the right trousers. And he's like, nobody ever does. That's the funny thing about this place. The dress code, nobody knows apart from me. And he just... It is the most Justin Gaethje shit ever. And Justin Gaethje is a guy who can do this like no other fighter, I think, in MMA, where you know, like, he can just drag you into this place that you've never been before. And he seems to just always be there. Like, every fight that goes there, you're like, oh, he's winning. I can't believe you walked through that door. You know, like watching a horror movie. Not in there. Don't go upstairs. Don't go upstairs. Justin Gaethje's up there. It is absolutely one of that. And again, great honorable mentions here. Curtis Blaydes v. Josh Hoke. Wild fight. Absolutely insane fight. Joshua Van v. Tatsuro Taira. Another brilliant, brilliant fight. And Movsar Evloev and Lerone Murphy, and Chuck Mendenhall wrote about this at the time. Not the fight we expected at all. Not the fight we expected at all. And some might say Evloev felt the need to fight in a certain way because perhaps opportunities haven't come his way, like the aforementioned Armin Sarukian, but all brilliant, brilliant fights. Ben, event of the year, this was your one. Are you surprised, right? If I had told you in January 2026, the event of the year will be UFC White House, would you be surprised or would you have said, nah, well, I mean, how are you going to beat that?
I would have been a little surprised. I'm surprised at the execution at this one, honestly, because what I was expecting was that, you know, you might struggle with the outdoor nature of it, with doing it in a place that is not a sports venue at all. It's just, you know, the lawn of the White House, not known for all the sports events it has hosted. And I also thought, based on how the UFC had gone so over the top and lavishing attention on Donald Trump when he showed up at events that didn't have anything to do with him, that when they did an event at the White House on his birthday, that they were going to really crank that up. And if anything, they toned it way down, which I was not expecting at all. And then you got a bunch of great performances. Josh Hoke was really the only one who spoiled it. He embarrassed us in front of company, you know? And I was talking about this with my co-main event podcast co-host Chad Dunnis, where a friend of his, who is a longtime golf writer, Kevin Van Valkenburg.
I can imagine him up. How a golf writer would have received that
situation.
Well,
see, he only heard one thing about this event afterwards coming out, which I was just like, oh, yeah, did you watch this event? And he's like, I heard that a guy got on the mic and said, Michelle Obama's a man. And you're like, well, damn it. That is, you know, it would have been so easy just to not do that. And then people would have come away and been just like, wow, they really pulled it off. But honestly, the visual spectacle of it, they made the most of that setting. They made the most of the walkouts, all that, having the U.S. Marine band there classed up the joint a whole lot, and then seeing it end on that huge upset with Justin Gaethje beating Ilia Topuria, you're like, wow, they really pulled off something and did like big worldwide viewer numbers. Not Super Bowl numbers, still a bit of an unforced error to go around setting a bar for yourselves that you couldn't possibly hit, but still really big audience numbers for MMA and for the UFC. So yeah, it's hard to say anything else deserves to be called. The only other like close runner up is the MVP MMA event on Netflix. And that was mostly notable because it was, hey, look, someone other than the UFC can put on at least one big MMA event that gets a huge audience on a big platform. And yet when you look at the actual fights you got out of that one, I don't know if you can say that they had anywhere near the same meaning or relevance for the sport as it exists today. You had kind of a bunch of squash matches. Everything went exactly as you thought it was going to go when you looked at it on paper. And so that, I think, is where you fall short of hitting the UFC White House level.
Can I ask how, like, Like, as I'm watching that, like, I'm kind of in awe of it. I think it was an emotional event as well, which the Marine Corps band, shout out Gunnery Sergeant Brooks on the clarinet, my favorite in the whole band, I gotta say. But it was like...
You're a big clarinet guy. I mean, everybody knows about you.
I mean, that's my instrument. But, you know, genuinely, like, as this is happening, I'm kind of like, look at this fucking sport. Like how are we here? And I know there's some negative sentiments attached to the presidency or whatever like that, but I didn't think about that. And I wonder, like, what was it like? This sounds so corny. This sounds so fucking corny as it's coming out of my mouth. Oh, how did it feel as an American to watch that? And I'm being serious. Like, I'm genuinely asking.
Well,
that's never a positive. It's never positive when you start with the whale, okay? It's never.
This is going to be on a lot of our minds, I'm sure, this year, the 4th of July, the 250th anniversary. It's a complicated time to be an American right now. It's not, I don't know if there's ever been like a simple time where we're just like, yay, it's going great. You know, like, doesn't feel like it's going that great right now. But then you see there are bright spots here and there. I think, honestly, the World Cup being here has been a real bright spot because it gets a lot of the political noise out of the way and reminds you just like, oh no, like when you just think about the people who exist here, America is still a nice place. We are still kind to each other. We're still capable of that. Other people can come and you get to see the country through the eyes of foreigners who are like amazed by certain stuff that we don't even see anymore because we just take it for granted. And then it's like, the gas station is huge. And we're like, you know what? Damn it. You're right. The gas station is huge. Ranch dressing is awesome. It's great to dip your French fries into a Wendy's Frosty. You're right. Those things are wonderful. And so, like, we do still have, like, some of these, like, bright spots, but it's also, there's weird stuff going on in America where it feels like the trajectory is troubling in some ways. And so that this couldn't not be part of that. Especially since we are doing it on the president's birthday, you know, all this, there's no way we were doing this without this very close personal relationship between the UFC and Trump. And so the thing that I would really praise the UFC for and how they went about this is that one thing we were wondering about beforehand, people were being like, can you just ignore the politics and enjoy the fights? And I was like, are they going to give us a chance to do that? Because when they have them show up at these broadcasts, or at other events, and they make a big deal of him on the broadcast, give him a walkout, all that kind of stuff, you're not really giving us a chance to ignore the politics. And here, I was surprised at the extent that they did manage to do that. It didn't feel so much like a Trump thing. It felt like they were trying, at least in their own way, to do an America thing. And I was surprised by that, and I think that that mostly came off. I think the AI history vignettes were the one area where they kind of... You were just like, what was that?
I didn't really hang around for them, to be honest. Like, as soon as those things started, I went and made a cup of tea. You know what I mean? I'm like, all right. You know what I mean?
You're not wrong. Those weren't great. But the whole event in general, you're just kind of like, okay, yeah. Yeah, you managed to pull that off. And that is like, it feels like the time in America that we're at right now is we are longing to be able to just turn our brains off a little bit here and there and just enjoy some stuff.
Yeah.
And it's hard, but it is possible. And so I think that they did it to a greater extent than I expected them to.
We don't get flyovers here. And I can tell you something, Ben.
That's a uniquely American thing.
I fucking I can't tell you the feeling in my body when I see a flyover. Dana White was just like, holy shit. And I was with him. I was only watching on TV. And I was like, oh my God, oh my God. And I was like, I was sitting down like an hour afterwards and being like, fucking, I just flew a lot of planes over. What the fuck? Like, I was genuinely like, there were two fights in and I'm still just like, what the fuck is after happening here? This is. Yeah.
Well, I would point out that was the moment where I went, didn't they say this wouldn't cost taxpayers a dime? Because I don't know if you've heard.
Money well spent. Money well spent.
When those planes take off. You're already, you know, in the hole a lot of money. So that was one. I'll tell you what's really cool. I've been to a bunch of different sports events over the years where they do flyover stuff. And my favorite one I ever saw was going to a University of Montana football game. and they did a flyover with one of the huge planes. I don't know what they're called, but that they use them in fighting forest fires, especially in Montana. It's one of the things, one of the areas in which Montana is a true innovator is fighting forest fires. We're the home of the smoke jumper. We send our smoke jumpers worldwide to teach other people how to do this shit. And fighting fires from like an aerial perspective is one of the things that we have a lot of experience in. And so they took one of these planes that you'll sometimes see them, and they're capable of just like scooping down on a lake somewhere, scooping up a bunch of water, flying off with it, flying to the fire, and then dropping it on there. And they're huge planes. They're just like a big lumbering machine. And they did a flyover over the stadium before the game with one of those. And it was just like, hell yeah. Not only because it felt a little easier to feel good about it rather than just like, look at our military might here at this football game. It was just like, look at this innovation that we have that is like quintessentially Montanan. And you get to see the thing up close and everybody kind of gets a chance to marvel at like the big mechanized monster that this thing is. It was great.
I love that shit, man. Like, I mean, please spend all the money, the taxpayers' money, on more flyovers because they make me feel a way that, you know, nothing in Ireland could possibly make me feel. Maybe a bit of a, you know, I can remember I put this one in the email thread because I get tasked with breakout star of the half year and there's only one name that comes to mind. Mm-hmm. But it's the same name that won the ire of your golf writing comrade. It's Josh Hocking. And I don't think there's anyone else you can put in this spot. And it's not to say like, right, so I actually write this in the piece, like when you think of the word star, like Josh Hocking isn't immediately the kind of guy you're going to think about. You know, a roundly adored, almost, stars are almost unanimously adored. Josh Hocking is certainly not that. He is not Lionel Messi. He is not Taylor Swift. He is a guy that has won the ire of more people than he has won the adoration of, I'd say. But at the same time, he's a guy that we can't stop talking about. And he's also a guy with an amazing skill set. He has athleticism that is rarely seen at heavyweight. He is obviously rushing through this division. And he has told Ari Lawani in a roundabout way, like, yeah, I just say shit so people react to it. And I kind of feel weird about that. It's like, it's kind of like, are you calling me stupid? You know what I mean?
Didn't we know that though? Didn't we? Like, I wasn't under the impression that he was out here just being like, I'm going to tell these people my sincere beliefs and God willing, they'll come around to my side. Like, obviously he's just trying to get a rise out of people. You're not supposed to say that part though.
If you're doing
a character and the idea is like, okay, I'm going to like get a reaction from people. You kind of weaken your own character by going out and being like, this is all just to piss you guys off. I don't believe any of this. Like, we're supposed to say that to you. You're not supposed to say it to us.
Yeah. No, that is perfectly put, to be fair. It is him, though. I don't think it's close. Lonnie Kavanagh was in there. Quillen Selkie, who's just been announced for a fight against Gamrot, which is very, very interesting. Some people might dispute the addition of Petro Cabrera, who's only had one fight in 2026 against Benson Henderson. He starts him in 20 seconds, but he is a star. The guy is selling a lot of tickets. He's commanding a lot of interest for PFL. He feels like he's going to be the new Dakota or the new Doumbé. He feels like he's going to be one of those guys, and he can sell in tickets and he's compelling that much interest. He might not have had a performance yet akin to the likes of Salkeed, Kavanagh, or Hocking, but I think he's there. I've also put Jocelyn Edwards in here because I think she's kind of emerged from nowhere. Well, not from nowhere, but initially when Jocelyn came into the UFC, I don't think we would have had her beating Norma Dumont and things like that. I do feel like she's had a great year so far. Moving it on, storyline of the half year. This was Mr. Ben Folks again. Take it away, Ben.
Well, yeah, you know, for me, there were two competing ones in my mind. One was the emergence of MVP MMA on Netflix, and then the other was the UFC moving over and beginning its Paramount era. And I ultimately went with the UFC and Paramount because, for one thing, it felt like a bigger shift in the sport itself in a lot of ways, whereas MVP MMA, what they showed us was they did one event. And they showed somebody other than the UFC can do one event on a big platform, get big numbers. But the UFC moving over to Paramount in this huge money deal, where I'm still mystified as to how Paramount could possibly think they're going to make this money back. But it is the first time since I've been following this sport, I started really following this sport in the late 90s, early 2000s. And that's almost 30 years, PC.
Yeah.
This is the first time in that entire three-decade history, the price to watch the UFC and to follow all the UFC fights went down. It never goes down. It always only goes up. It's like, you know, the Hold Steady had a great song lyric about a woman who only pays attention to the price of cigarettes. She hopes they'll go down. They never go down. They only go up. Everything. The price only goes up. And the UFC price went down by a lot. We went from this ESPN thing where you were paying the subscription cost and $80 per pay-per-view. And now you're just paying this one flat fee. It's the first time ever that the UFC, every single tier of its programming, all that it has to offer is available for one monthly price. And the monthly price is honestly pretty reasonable. Mm. And I'll say this. While I'm not without complaints about Paramount Plus, the app works better than ESPN Plus. The ESPN Plus app pissed me off every single time.
I never used it. I saw people, like, particularly at the start, no, actually throughout, there was always something. It was crazy.
Always something.
We obviously didn't.
It was the only app where there was consistently a thing where I would go on there and be like, "Do you want to watch this thing that you're paying us for?" And I press the button that basically says, "Yes, show me the thing." And they'd be like, "Oh, no, nah, can't do that." I went back. I was going to watch a 30 for 30 episode that I wanted to watch for research purposes for something I was writing. And I turned off my ESPN Plus subscription the moment the UFC switched over to Paramount Plus. I was like, done. It's canceled. And I went over there and they were like, "You could restart your subscription, get back in here, watch this thing you want to watch." And I went, damn it. Okay, I'll do it just for like a 1 month so I can watch this thing. Press the button that said, "All right, let me turn on the subscription. Let me watch the thing." And they just took me to a screen that was like, "Nah, I can't do it. Sorry." And I was just like, screw you guys. That's it. I'm never giving you another chance. Paramount Plus doesn't do that. That big change over there, just being able to watch all the UFC stuff. I think it's a big shift for a couple reasons. One of them is that it should, over the life of this 7-year deal, theoretically, you should pick up fans. You should pick up a lot of new fans as to UFC because you have lowered the barrier to entry. Mm. Before, you know, you had all these, they had like two separate paywalls to get in and watch on ESPN. And now it's a lot easier. I think we're trained as viewers to go, okay, turn on a monthly subscription for something that I want to watch and see if I like it enough, and if there's enough other stuff on there that I want to keep the subscription running, I'll do that. I've subscribed to so many stupid streaming services for 1 month over the course of my lifetime, PC. Oh, I mean, I've got all the different PBSs. I got PBS documentaries. I got PBS Masterpiece. I got all this kind of stuff. And you know, I'll watch Wolf Hall or something like that, and then I'll be like, all right, that's it. I'm done. I'm turning it off. I've subscribed to so many things to watch one movie. You know, because they had the one movie. So it's like, I think people are easier convinced to do that than they are like, give us $80 to watch this one event. And you're like, $80? Go to hell. It's a lot easier. You should pick up a lot of fans on Paramount Plus. And so I'll be interested to see if we do that. I also think that it's a big deal because when all the stuff is available for one subscription price, fans can stop doing this math problem in their heads every time there's a pay-per-view where you're going, all right, it's a numbered event. Those are big ones. There's title fights. Is there enough on here to justify me spending this money to order this thing? Or is there just one or two fights I care about and I'll watch them on Reddit before it gets taken down? I'll watch it on social media, especially if I think there's one fight I care about on here and it should be over in 2 to 3 minutes. That's going to be on Twitter as soon as it's over. So you take that away. We don't have to do that anymore. We don't have to play that game with ourselves anymore. Now we've just got it. It should make it easier for people to just be like, there's a UFC this weekend. I'll check it out. I'm already paying for it. I don't have to ask myself if it's worth it, if it's not worth it. So I think that is a really big thing. I also think it should be a big thing. And I think there's evidence to suggest maybe it is, where other people look and they go, Paramount is willing to pay $1 billion a year to get some MMA, to get the UFC. Well, hey, if Scott Coker's starting a new thing, maybe it is worth some other streaming service paying him. Maybe it is worth Netflix getting heavier into MMA. So, like, I think that it's the ripples are going to be felt all through the pond on this one. That's why I think it's the biggest storyline so far.
Yeah, and I think it started kind of badly. you know, the first 3 months. And I know you, Ben, I'd never heard someone say, listen, I'm not paying a lot of money for this. That you were forgiving the UFC for all kinds of mediocre cards or lackluster cards. Because you're like, well, you know, it's $8 a month or whatever the hell it is. I don't really care. I was like, shit, is this what the product is? But I will say, since about April, it's picked up and you got the White House card. You've got this big 329 card. I think it is looking good now. I will say I'm very jealous that you can subscribe to PBS because I tried to get that dude, you know, the dude who did that, like, 10-part Vietnam series. How was his name?
Ken Burns. You're talking about the big homie Ken Burns. Ken Burns don't miss, man.
I was trying to get his jazz documentary. I was trying to get the jazz one and he couldn't fucking get it here. And then I was like using a VPN and they copped on that I was using a VPN. They're like, no, sir. And I was like, well, where the fuck can I watch the jazz documentary? I mean, where can I get it? I wanted to download the jazz documentary for this flight. I know I don't have it. I have Tom Hanks World War II. Learn all kinds of things about World War II. Fascinating, fascinating time.
It was a big deal. Yeah. It was a pretty big
deal. My brother's trying to tell me for
years. I am surprised that of all the Ken Burns joints out there, the one that Pete was like, I gotta watch this one, is the jazz one.
Yeah. Well, I don't know what it was. I think it was in a Miles Davis kind of situation at the time. Or maybe I was reading something about Miles Davis and I was like, well, that's really interesting. Or the origins of jazz or something. I can't remember what it was, but there was definitely a thing and I read something and they were like, I'll tell you who explores this really well. It's Ken Burns and his jazz documentary. And I was like, well, I'll get that. Can't get it anywhere.
Yeah.
Have any European people?
Ken Burns, he also made a Muhammad Ali, I think it was a 3-parter on Muhammad Ali. And, you know, especially as a fight writer and as somebody who has written a lot on like boxing history and read a bunch of books about Muhammad Ali and stuff. And I was just kind of like, okay, this is one that ironically I might skip when I never skip a Ken Burns one, just because what are you going to tell me? What new stuff are you going to tell me about Muhammad Ali? The story is so well known at this point. It feels like his story has been told and mythologized to death that I didn't think there was anything new. And then I watched it and I was like, he finds a way. Yeah. He'll find some stuff out there that you didn't know. And he presents it in such a great way. I tell you what, the other one you want to watch, BT, is his multi-part series on country music. I'm telling you, it's fantastic. You don't even have to like country music to be into it.
I've got to get through. If they give me jazz first, I'll get country music. You know, once they just let me in, PBS. Oh, maybe I could fucking do something when I'm in Vegas.
There you go.
Mm. And I'll download both.
You'll be one of us then.
And I'll run away. I'll download them so they're on the iPad or whatever. And I'll be like, ha ha, you fools.
You will abscond to Ireland with a trove of Ken Burns.
Elaine, you won't believe what these people are watching over there.
Customs is going to catch you coming back and be like, what do you got? We see the guilty look on your face.
Come back at the half years, Ronda Rousey. It's not even close. And it's about like where she was at before she came back. I would not have believed that she could have done this so well. And it kind of reminds us in time where we're losing so many stars, how valuable a star can be. And maybe we'll get a bit of that next week with Conor McGregor as well. Yeah, and I get it. People were like, the fight was blah, 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 or whatever. That's what Ronda does, though, as well. Like, at the height of her power, that's what it was all about. And, you know, there was no kind of hat in the hand. I'm sorry, guys. It was just like, fucking Ronda Rousey.
Ronda Rousey. Kicking in the door, yelling at Hunter Campbell, of all people. It was great, like, image rehabilitation for her to come back and then leave on better terms this time than last time. And to also show us the star power has endured in a way where I can put a brand new promotion kind of on my back and carry it to big heights.
Yeah.
That was a thing that I didn't know she was still capable of, that I didn't know enough people still knew and recognized Ronda Rousey to be able to do that. But her showing up at some of those press conferences, and you're like, that's it. That's, you remember, that's what she used to bring. She could bring that kind of heat that very few other people are able to do, especially on the women's side of the sport right now.
Absolutely. The other people are basically just other people on that card. Mike Perry, Francis Ngannou, who made the return to MMA. Well, it wasn't a return for Francis Ngannou. He'd just been out for a couple of years. Justin Gaethje, comeback, different kind of comeback. Comeback to victory, comeback to greatness. Finally, most surprising developer is MVP MMA. This was Drake Riggs. And I thought the honorable mentions again here. Drake Riggs killing it, man. He's really having some serious discourse with himself as he's doing this. His honorable mentions are Eddie Hearn and Matchroom Talent Agent getting involved with Tom Aspinall. Couldn't agree more. And Alex Pereira goes scorched on Herb Dean. I want to get onto that because that is the next topic of conversation.
Segway King. Segway King.
I should have used it, but what I want to ask you before we move on is MVP needs to tell us something here. We need to find out what's going on next because it's all good. We all got behind that event. Our audiences shat all over us for liking another promotion that wasn't UFC. But as we said at the time, this is only as good as long as it lasts. Like, we need something else. Are you kind of getting that itchy feet? I'm already doing it, man. Because we were thinking 3-4 a year maybe. And I'm like, we would have fucking heard about something already if another one was going down.
Yeah, it does seem like the air leaked out of the balloon a little bit at this point. Because you had those huge numbers. Everybody was very surprised. Everybody was very impressed with what you were able to pull off. And so you should at least be giving us some kind of like target date, some kind of sense of what's next. But it's also, I think, clearly Netflix is not that interested in getting into a thing where we run a regular fight promotion that puts fights on every week or every other week or whatever. Their whole approach to it seems to be, call us when you have something big. And it's tough to put together something big outside the UFC just because it's tough to find available fighters who are free agents who can sign with you, enough of them where you can put together some interesting fights and we go, okay, that's going to be genuinely big. Netflix seems like it would be totally okay if you're like, hey, if you don't have anything big for 6 to 8, 9 months, fine, whatever, just let us know when you do. But for MVP MMA as a brand, they do need to at least give some people something to look forward to here pretty soon.
Yeah, absolutely. That is all for our the awards section. Make sure you go over to Uncrown and check this out. We're going to quickly hit on some great stuff that Ben's put out this week. Will we start with Herb Dean? Because that was obviously one of the suggestions Drake made, or the honorable mentions he made. Alex Pereira going scorched and Villa on Herb Dean. And it has been pretty solid for poor old Herb. It's been a constant barrage of shit he's taken. We saw Henry Cejudo. I know we have the video there. I think we'll just skip the video because we took up a lot of time with the awards, but he's getting it from all angles. And Ben, you went to that official summit, and I think that gave you an insight into officials that most people do not have. I've been lucky enough to know Mark Goddard very well, a few different officials, and I have a good understanding of it, but not to the level that you would have, having been there and seeing how these guys are trained. Tell me, what's your take on this Herb Dean thing?
Well, one of the things somebody asked in the mailbag where they were like, why is the response from Big John and from other referees always to just kind of circle the wagons around these guys and be like, hey, Herb's a good guy. And, you know, people aren't accusing him of not being a good guy. They're accusing him of doing a bad job as a referee. Why are they all like rushing to his defense? And I think it is important to note that I'm the refs and officials and judges and everybody, I think that they feel like, hey, we are in a maligned club as far as the public is concerned. They only think about us when we screw up. When they're talking about us, it's because something has gone wrong. So I think there is an impulse from them to defend each other publicly. But privately, one of the things that they were saying a lot in this Combat Sports Official Summit was, we need to hold each other accountable, and you need to have other refs, other judges, other officials who you can count on to, they might be your friends, but they're going to tell you when you're wrong. They're going to tell you when you screwed up. You need people who can be honest with you that way. And they all seem like they had been through that sometimes. It seemed like probably a lot of them had been through it with Big John personally. Like the idea, like Big John is going to come out there in public and defend you a little bit, just because you don't want to be the referee who is pointing fingers at other referees, second guessing them. That will cause a little rift in the community, I could see. But privately, like Big John is the guy who's going to tell you to your face when he thinks you're wrong. Mm. And he's going to be honest and upfront about when he's been wrong. But like, he is the guy where it's just sort of like naturally sort of combative in a way. And I'm sure that they're having some of those conversations. I do think it's easy for us sometimes, a ref makes one or two mistakes, and if they come in close proximity to each other, a narrative takes hold. This guy sucks, has always sucked, will always suck, needs to be fired, and perhaps imprisoned. And it just spirals out of control pretty quickly. And that's the, you know, when Alex Pereira was really targeting Herb Dean, and it was basically just like, I would like to see this guy fired, suspended, made an example of, possibly prosecuted, and you're just like, Jesus. You know, like that one, especially Some of the other ones where you're like, okay, people are pulling each other's hair and we're not doing anything about it. The shots to the back of the head one, I don't know if there's a whole lot of refs that would have done anything really differently in that. I think it was a tough situation. And I also think that maybe sometimes we misunderstand some of these rules. So, and yet when you have a couple weeks where every time you show up at an event, there's something weird that happens. There's something that people don't like. They're going to remember those way more than they remember all the nights that you did a good job or all the nights that you were there and they didn't have to think about what kind of job you were doing. You just melted into the scenery, which is how you know you're doing a good job as a ref most of the time.
Yeah. Interesting. Another topic that we want to discuss is Topuria, the quitter. And you've wrote about Nomas, the Duran, the second meme between Duran and Sugar Ray Leonard, which is really interesting because I was having a conversation about that exact fight. It was pertaining to McGregor's upcoming fight with Holloway. And somebody was saying, like, he's been out for so long. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if he has a Nomas situation in the middle of there, all this kind of stuff. You know, like, it wouldn't be, this person was saying, it wouldn't be beyond the realms of possibility for me to see that like this, given how, you know, the insights we've had to the life he's leading. He's up against Max Holloway, a cardio machine. Could this be one of those things where you just haven't looked down the barrel of a gun in a while and you're suddenly in there and you're like, oh, fuck. Jesus Christ, this guy's really good. I thought that was interesting that you had it there. There was also some officiating discrepancies some had with that fight. The Topuria fight was Mark Goddard in the cage that night. And I remember there was two different doctors in there. It was a bit of a clusterfuck. But do you think that added to this notion of Topuria as a quitter, as some people have decided that he is? I do not agree with that statement, I should say.
No, I think that that's entirely unfair to him in this situation. Like, people were immediately saying that afterwards he quit on the stool. Justin Gaethje was saying he quit on the stool. UFC went and auctioned off the stool itself.
How confident are you that was the stool?
I don't know how you could be confident at all. They might have just grabbed a stool and sold it to you. But also, like, even if it was the stool, you're going to buy it. Who's going to be impressed that you have that? I don't know.
Do you put it on the wall if you get it? Like, do you rack it on the wall, do you think? And then, like,
somebody has it, some rich asshole has it in his, like, game room or something, his billiards room, and somebody's going to come in there. He probably sets it out so that somebody will just come in there not thinking about it and sit down on it. He could be like, whoa, 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 brother, that's the stool. You don't just sit on that. That's the stool Ilia Topuria quit on. But I think there's a big difference between a fighter where he's just sort of, like, mentally beaten or he's exhausted or whatever, and he's just like, no, I'm done. Like, if you have the ability to sit there clear-eyed and look at somebody and be like, I don't want to fight anymore, then that's quitting. Ilia Topuria at that point was essentially blinded in both eyes and just slumped over on the stool, and he wasn't even the one who said it. It was his brother saying, right, no, we're done. We're going to stop here. I'm not going to let you go on. There is often a difference sometimes. We've seen this before with having a family member in the corner, because sometimes, you know, the coaches, they want to push you through that stuff. They're a little less likely to throw in a towel on your behalf. And family members are a little more able, it seems, at times to see the human being in there and be like, hey, you might lose tonight. We might take a bunch of criticism. I would rather that happened and have something horrible happen to you in there, and or like life-changing injuries happen to you in there, especially it was clearly his eyes being damaged. I could see him being like, look, we're going to think about tomorrow. We're going to think about the rest of your life and the rest about your career, and we're going to stop it here. I remember seeing Nick Diaz throw in the towel for Nate Diaz once when he got stopped in a fight. And it was the kind of thing where it's like, neither Diaz brother, could you ever see them quitting themselves? I think it was Josh Thompson one in San Jose. And you saw the towel come flying in, and it was Nick saving his little brother, you know? But there is a difference between quitting and your corner saying, nope, I'm not going to let you go back out there again. And maybe the doctor should have been the one who was saying a round before that, telling the referee he shouldn't go back out there again. There's a big difference between that. But it is an interesting reaction that fight fans have. We're so ready to call somebody a quitter. We're so ready to accuse them of being scared and giving up and everything. And it's like we feel this sort of compact, like this contract has been signed between fan and fighter that you showed up here, you owe us a blood sacrifice, you owe us this kind of finality. And it gets to a point at times when it does get unfair. But it is when it is genuine, when somebody has when we do think that they're a quitter and there's reason to think that, that really sticks to people. I mean, Roberto Duran was a great fighter, had an amazing career, and still as an old man, people are asking him about the No Mas fight. There's people who don't know anything else about him that know about the No Mas fight. It just, that stain stays with a fighter.
And it's so different, like, you know, the punishment that Ilya took compared to what Duran was getting styled on by Leonard. There's no doubt about it. Like, he wasn't in the fight, but he didn't get that kind of punishment. Like, you weren't looking at Duran's face and going, oh no, like, how can you keep going?
In the scorecards, it was still a winnable fight for him, you know? And it wasn't like he was taking huge punishment at the time that he stopped. You know, that's what made it so weird, the moment where he kind of turns away, because it's like they have a spirited exchange that he seems to be in it. They clinch up, the referee separates him, and he turns and he's just like, no.
Yeah.
And that was what was so baffling for people. It was also strange to think that he clearly just misunderstood what it was going to mean for him to quit there. And because the way he told it afterwards was, he won the first fight, partied a whole bunch, got fat. They wanted to do the rematch, you know, months later, and he felt like he needed more time to get back in shape.
Kind of blamed on diuretics, like he was taking fucking crazy.
Yeah, he said his stomach was cramping and everything from trying to cut so much weight so quickly because he had just got so out of shape celebrating the first fight. And he thought, you know, I don't have it tonight. He's going to win this one tonight. Let's just stop it here and I'll focus on the rematch. And it went, people were going, oh no. No, we're not going to let you off the hook that easy.
It was 10 million, wasn't it? It was like a crazy amount of money he was offered. I think it was like 10 million, which at the time is fucking wild. Like, what was it, the 80s? The 80s?
Yeah, I think it was 1980.
Yeah. Insane. For sometimes you guys ask us what books, The Four Kings, absolutely brilliant book about that middleweight cluster there where Hearns, Hagler, Duran and Sugar Ray Leonard, and they go in depth on No Mas and of course the first fight, which is a big part, I feel, about how it was portrayed, because Duran was such an animal the first time they met, and beating Sugar Ray, the golden boy of America, to Panamanian people would have meant absolutely everything. Like, there's scenes of him, you can look them up on YouTube, flying home to Panama. And the airport is just like, how are they going to land this plane? Everyone in Panama is at the airport. And you can fully, like, there's videos of him eating. Like, he gets so big. Like, he is just drinking, eating, and the rest, I'd assume, for a very long time after that. But such an interesting fight in combat sports history. Finally, we have McGregor's final interview with Oscar Willis as it's headlined on the MacLiv. We just have a very short clip of it because we were kind of texting about this last night, Ben. It's a bit of a weird one. Have a look at this.
What do you think Max doesn't understand about fighting at 170? What is he not realizing until he gets in there and actually tries it?
Listen, there's a different thought when you're fighting at 170.
It's a strange... I've never seen McGregor like that. It's almost a whispering Mac, if we're going to do it. We pick new things to call him. He's in his whispering Mac era. I don't know. Just to me... obviously, I covered Conor for a very long time. He used to have this real energy about him on fight week. Even when he was cutting weight to featherweight, it was like, can't wait to get my hands on this guy. You know, like, that's finally happening. That is not... Now, obviously, it's only a four-minute interview and, you know, you can be feeling a certain way for 4 minutes of a day. That's completely different to the rest of that day. But to me, it was just like, that looks like, to me, like a guy who's not too excited about this, I guess.
It did seem a little understated. So it also seemed like maybe the audio was, because you're picking up a lot of like ambient noise in the audio. So maybe that was part of why he seems like quiet. But a lot of the stuff he was saying in that video was, camp's going great, and therefore I don't need to talk about how great camp's going. Like, that we didn't put out a whole bunch of videos about how great we're doing and training and showing all this stuff. You only do that if you're not confident. And I'm so confident that I don't need to tell you about it. And it's like, but it is kind of what we're doing with the interview, though, right? Is telling us about it. Isn't that like, that used to be part of, like, one of the parts of the game he always excelled at, was selling us this fight and getting us hyped for it a little bit. And so it did seem very understated. It's interesting to me, everybody is so focused on a contest of physiques here. They're talking about, like, McGregor looks big, looks really shredded. It will be interesting to see how Max Holloway looks.
Did you get done by a fighter? Can I just ask you? You shared out the picture of Max Holloway looking like me with his top off. And I was like, you're aware that this is AI, right? Like, were you aware? Because this would be the second.
I was not at the time when people. Well,
you abused
they were
me
comparing...
last week for me falling for AI. And I think this week you had two snares of AI.
I got, I did. Well, this one, that was not even the bad one. The bad one was when I showed my daughter a video of a mantis shrimp punching a crab. And I was like, look at this. This is amazing. And she was like, that's dad. That's AI.
How the fuck did you think that was real?
It's mantis shrimp, man. They're really fast. I don't know if you ever heard that, Pete. Everybody knows that about the mantis shrimp.
How many seconds did your daughter look at the screen? Really real. How many seconds did you have to look at the screen?
Three, maybe three. It looked real. I'm going to send it to you. It looked really real. And then she points out, she's like, even the look at the profile on Instagram, it says AI creator. And I was like, well, now I'm the old man where my kids have to tell me, Dad, this thing you saw on the internet is not real. And she did not let it go very easily either. Once she had that on me, she kept reminding me. And I was like, hey, look, it's not like I saw the one of the gorilla dancing and thought that one was real. Like, this one seemed plausible. But I mean, the thing is, people keep pointing at Conor McGregor's physique and being like, look at how ripped and how big and like in shape he is. Like, he is absolutely ready for this one. And just kind of like, haven't we learned in this sport that there is a lot more to it than looking good getting off the bus?
Yeah. I mean, you've made a point of it. You've made a point of it many times, Ben, about the bus situation. And yeah, I mean, honestly, that's the thing I can't get over here. It's like, right, as well as the point you made about him talking about this fight in terms of, like, that's why we haven't shown anything. On the flip side, like, Max Holloway, who famously does not spar hard, like, he is a movement guy. He keeps his, you know, he wants to get chin checked in the fight as opposed to outside. And you'll remember Robbie Lawler's brilliant run at welterweight. That kind of punctuated that too. He's like, I am not sparring anymore. I am not doing it. I'll move around. I'll get looks, but I'm not going full tilt. Max Holloway is sharing a lot about this camp. And he has Jack Della Maddalena, who I saw somebody saying online, oh, terrible guy to get in to prepare for Conor McGregor. I'm like, what? This is a really good guy to get in to prepare for Conor McGregor.
And just physically for like, because sometimes you just need that body in training. That's going to give you an idea of like the dimensions, the weight, the like, here's about where this guy is going to be, where I can expect, like, how I can expect it to feel in there. So I think he actually is a pretty good choice there, honestly. And I would think for Max, the focus has got to be on get this into the later rounds. Mm. Get this fight into third, fourth, fifth round. Put that pressure and that pace on him, high volume, high output, and see if you wear him down, because he has been shown to wear down. And especially if you haven't fought in a few years, that's the part where we might be able to expose you. The first round Conor McGregor is always going to be really dangerous. That's always going to be the most dangerous Conor McGregor, is that first round. But I will be interested to see, like, he has put on a lot of mass since the last time we saw him fight. How does that translate into a fight? Because we've seen that go both ways.
Yeah.
We've seen guys show up having put on a bunch of weight because either they felt like they needed to, or, you know, changing divisions or whatever. And sometimes it affects them more than they think it's going to. Sometimes they lose a little quickness and explosive power. They lose a little bit of cardio because they're carrying around that much weight. And especially if it's your first time fighting in this new body, you might get surprised at how it feels. You know, this, I'm telling you, they had a saying in the NFL for many years about guys who look like Tarzan and play like Jane. Just because you show up there and you got the muscles coming out of your ears and you're looking all ripped doesn't necessarily mean it's going to transfer over to like better results athletically. Look at Fedor.
Yeah.
A guy never had abs in his life, Beatsy.
Yeah.
And he was one of the best heavyweights in the world.
Yeah. There's a lot. There's like, it's hard for me. I nearly feel kind of obscured by having such a close view of McGregor when he was McGregor. You know, like, I was so lucky, like, you know, like, I was watching this guy spar all the time, front row for all of his fights, watching him prepare for those fights, watching him prepare for the Mendez fight on one leg. And like, he's got bashed up, man. His leg got fucking snapped, like his toe ahead of the Chandler fight. And you think about him at his peak and how he used to use so many kicks to just set you up, to lead you right into this left hand. You're like, to take away his legs, and who knows, maybe he can throw those wheel kicks and he can do everything like that, and he can hit the oblique kicks he used to. But they were all just like this subterfuge, like to walk you into the big one, the atom bomb, which was his left hand. And you're like, if you take that away, how, and Max Holloway is such a fantastic boxer, how are you going to somehow walk him into the left hand? I don't know. I'm probably overthinking it, but I just think, there's this clip going around, and I keep thinking about it, of like McGregor just in his corner before the first Poirier fight starts, and they contrast with that with the third Poirier fight. Just simple shit, like things you wouldn't even think about. He's like pirouetting in 2014, pirouetting and throwing these obscure kicks and everything, and that's how he fights Poirier. He flies out and he started throwing these kicks, and Poirier actually had a little bit of success early on in that first fight, but the kicks just force him to back up, and then he's moving into the left hand, and that's eventually what catches him. And you're kind of like, I just can't imagine him being able to do that with this weight on him, first of all, and also with his legs, which have been injured quite significantly. And then you take into account that he lost those two fights to Poirier 5 years ago, and last year, Holloway pretty much kind of won every round against him, you know? Maybe, that's what I'm saying. Maybe the fact that I saw McGregor at his best, when I thought, and I know people disagree, when I thought he was the best fighter in the world, I just find it hard to believe that this guy, who has had such a long time out, who we saw enjoying the fruits of his labor, we'll say, a lot, is somehow going to be that guy again, if you get me.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd be surprised.
Yeah. Yeah, man. This is a game that does surprise us, though. Ben, what are the plans for July 4th? The day that we celebrate the American Republic's 250th birthday.
Well, I'll tell you, I need to give a shout out for part of my 4th of July plans. I'm going up to Flathead Lake, big lake here in Montana. It's spending some time on a lakefront cabin, just me and my wife. And one of my friends, who he actually opened the SBG gym in Whitefish, Montana.
Wow.
Great guy, Dan DeStefano, great jiu-jitsu black belt too.
Under Matt Thorne?
Kickboxer. I don't know exactly who he got his black belt from, but he and I used to train together a whole lot back when he lived in Missoula. And he is now the purveyor of Dynamite Dan's Pyromania Stand, a fireworks stand out there.
You have some
Highway
fucking cool
93.
Friends. You have some fucking like wild bastard friends who are just, I can't believe they're real people, honestly.
If you're in the neighborhood, you gotta head up Highway 93 to Dynamite Dan's Pyromania Stand. Pick yourself up some fireworks, blow some stuff up for the 4th of July. You know, PZ, I'm gonna be out there on the lake. Me and my dog Carl, we're gonna be out there on the lake, in the water, on the paddleboard with a bunch of Miller Lights, celebrating America, exactly what the Founding Fathers intended for us to do. So that's my plan. I hope that you have some plan to remember your American friends on this holiday. Might catch some World Cup soccer in there somewhere too. But that's what I'm doing.
Yeah. Are you enjoying the World Cup, by the way? I feel like you've really embraced
it.
Yeah, you've really embraced it, man.
I always get excited about the World Cup because it's just a fun. Everybody gets to come in, do their stuff. You know, all the fans get to show off their own sort of like sense of self.
Yeah.
And that, I think, is a lot of fun. But it's also, I like it when the games are on at a reasonable hour, because sometimes the time zone stuff will make it so that if you don't waking up at 3 a.m., you're not seeing this stuff live. I do enjoy how it's just like, there's games on all afternoon into the evening. It's a great time. I'll tell you what, that French team looks hard to beat, Pete.
Yeah.
They're good.
And Connor Brooks was at that match the other day. He was sitting behind the goal with Mbappe, scored the first goal. And it's, yeah, I'm with you. I was kind of waiting for that performance. And as soon as it came, I was like, who the fuck is going to be able to deal with that? That Michael Olise guy, interesting fact, Ben, he could have played for England. So England, as you know, steal players from everywhere. Ireland. Sorry.
You've mentioned this. I mean, you've mentioned this before.
This guy.
Harry Kane.
Yes. Jude Bellingham. I could go on. But this guy was playing in England for Crystal Palace. And he just wasn't considered like, you know, one of the guys that would be selected. He goes to Bayern. And he is playing outstanding and he declares for France. Like, this is a guy who lived his whole life in England, like in London, grew up there. And now they have one of them. It's such a weird situation for England to be in because they're usually all over that. And France, by the way, do a lot of this as well, of course. They look like a tremendous team. And we have Australia and Egypt playing now. Egypt already one goal up. And then we have later on tonight, I'm wearing the shirt. It's actually a bit mean that I'm wearing the shirt. And I'll tell you why, Ben. They're playing Cape Verde and there's an Irish man, like literally a dude who just lives in Tala and he plays in the Irish league here, Pico Lopez, who has become an amazing story here. He's going to be marking Messi tonight. He's a 34-year-old dude. Never thought like he'd play in the World Cup. He gets a message on LinkedIn from the Cape Verdean Football Association. He's like, your dad's from Cape Verde, isn't he? He's like, yeah. Oh, yeah, cool. Do you want to play in the World Cup? And he's like, oh, yeah. And now he is marking Messi tonight. Unbelievable story. And that's what it's all about, isn't it?
Yeah, that is a great story. Personally, I'm still mad about the red card decision in the U.S.'s game against Bosnia-Herzegovina. And we're going to be without that guy. We could have used him. Could have used him against Belgium.
Yeah.
We're hoping for the best.
I pick USA in that game. I really do.
I was surprised to see that I looked at some of the odds and USA was a very slight favorite there.
Now, Balogun is a loss. There's no doubt about it. But Belgium weren't good, man. They played Senegal the other night and they kind of rescued victory from the jaws of defeat. But they're old, man. And your team is full of energy. They're fucking live wires. I would go with that. I would think that they could beat Belgium. But you have classy fuckers there as well who could just do something. Like De Bruyne could do something. Lukaku, even though he is similarly in that athleticism to myself at the moment, he can do stuff up front. Really, really, I'm loving it.
The other one, you want to talk about live wires, the big pick that I'm making that I'm very excited about is round of 16 game going down over there in Mexico City.
Oh, yeah.
England going to have to go in there, play Mexico at home.
The Azteca.
I'm telling you right now, I'm saying it. Viva Mexico.
That's right.
They're winning this one, BC.
Yo, Roy Keane was talking about playing them in 94. Roy Keane, the greatest, in my opinion, the greatest Irish player who ever lived, played for Manchester United, my favourite player ever. He's on this panel with all these English guys. Like, they love him. He's a very controversial guy on TV. And he's like, you aren't ready for the altitude. He's like, I can remember playing 30 minutes against the Mexicans in 94, and we were dying. And we were looking at those guys, and they were laughing at us. Like, are you fucking serious? Like, you're already done? Like, it is a different kind of gravy. The Azteca, of course, as well, a bit of history. 1986, the hand of God, Maradona, does that against England, then knocks them out with one of the greatest goals ever scored in any football game ever. There is scar tissue for the English in the Azteca. And wouldn't it be terrible if they went out?
Is this what the Irish wink I've heard about?
Yeah, oh, it'd be awful.
Is that what we're doing here?
Well, that's it. Enjoy the World Cup, especially that game. Do we have any super chats, Andy? Oh yeah, there it is. It's like Hendrix is in the room with us. Dear Petey, sorry for my non-question super chats. Sorry to gallivanting Ben and Chuck. What are your thoughts on Max and Connor at £170? Peace and love. Thank you so much. I guess the only thing that I'm kind of obscured by my history with Connor and seeing him being so good. Like, the only thing I'm kind of leaving it open for is a bit of magic. Can he pull a rabbit out of the hat? Like, that's the way I see it. And I know that's the way everyone else is. Like, I'm seeing a lot of people being like, oh, he's going to smoke Max and all. But like, I think that's where I'm at with it. I think like he's capable of magic. A long time ago, he had a lot of it. He obviously has a very powerful punch. But I do think it'd be nearly pulling a rabbit out of the hat for me. And maybe that's, maybe my experience having seen him at the best and comparing that to what I'm seeing now, which is not a lot. Like I'm not in the camp. I'm not seeing him sparring. I think it would take something pretty magic for him to win the fight. What about you, Ben?
I mean, I think I could see paths to victory for him here, but they would have to come early. Because I do think that, you know, that weight, we have seen in the past Max Holloway when he's gone up and fought at lightweight.
That's fair, actually.
There are moments where, Poirier. Like, the first time where he and Poirier did it at lightweight, where you kind of saw a couple moments where he took a shot and he stepped back a little bit and went, okay, that's different. That's, normally you don't see Max Holloway take too many backward steps. And so there is a possibility that the weight, the size could make a difference. But I do think it would have to be early on in the fight. I think Conor McGregor in the first round still could potentially get it done, especially against, you know, Max is, he's put a lot of miles on the odometer. He's not getting any younger either. So that's possible you get to him early. But I think if you get to round 3, 4, 5, that's when Max takes over.
Yeah. Do you see McGregor going 4 or 5?
I mean, if he can't knock him out in the first round, then I think he'll have to. I think, or the thing is, I think if you're going to fight Max Holloway, you have to be ready for that, right? You have to know, like, this is a guy who is never throwing one big shot to knock you out, usually. Like, he's a volume striker. He's a pressure guy. He's going to, like, his output in some of these fights is just tremendous. And that's how he wins it. And so you've got to have a plan for how we're going to avoid getting into that kind of fight with him. I just don't know what that plan's going to be and how well Conor McGregor might stick to it in there.
Yeah, I am intrigued. I'm very excited for the fight. We'll be doing the watch along. I'll be with Rick and GC watching that. I'm very intrigued because McGregor used to feed off doubt. Like that was what lit the fire inside of him. Like, oh great, these people don't think I'm going to do it. And we've seen the Lehane advertising he did with Polymarket. Like he is very aware that he's being doubted here. So I'm interested to see, but I just can't see it yet. Maybe like the more I see him on fight week and maybe like see him moving about and that, I'll have a different kind of take on it. But it's just hard. It's just, yeah, I don't know. But you make a good point about moving up against Poirier in the past. Do we have anything else, Andy? Congratulations, Ben, Chuck, all Americans on 4th July. I live in Sweden. 6th June is a big day in Sweden. Well, I'm sorry that we did not know that at the time. I love Sweden and I know Ben loves Sweden too. Am I correct?
I do. I've had a great time in Sweden. I just heard from a listener of my podcast who was saying he spent, this sounds like one of the best things ever. He was like, I just spent 10 days lake hopping and drinking beer all across Sweden. And now I got to get on a plane and go home to the UK and I don't want to go.
Oh,
I was like, brother, I don't blame you. That sounds like a pretty great way to spend a summer.
Do you know Philip O'Connor?
No.
He's an Irish journalist. He's a great guy. He'd be a big mentor for me. He is from the north of Dublin, north side of Dublin. He moved to Sweden in the 90s and he has a family over there, beautiful, beautiful family. But his thing now, he's over covering the World Cup in Canada now. He bought a lake house. I think it was like 5 years ago. And his pet project is just building this lake house. Like all through winter, he'll build it up. And now he has this pristine lake house in the probably around the lakes that this guy's hopping along around Sweden there, around Stockholm there. But what a brilliant place. Scandinavian people are just better than us. That's, I really wish I had a better way to put it. But if you've been there, you're just like, shit, these are better than us. I don't know what else to say. Anything else, Andy? PC, do you think if Ian Gary fights back in Ireland, we will see more Irish fighters get an opportunity? I would love to see UFC big nights back in Ireland. Few points on this. They're building a big venue where 3 Arena is, which will have double the attendance. So we'll be able to have 20,000 people there. So that's more than McGregor had in 2014 with the Brandel fight. And look, Ian is a brilliant fighter. There's absolutely no doubt about it. We've seen this push with Matchroom Talent Agency. That's to kind of stoke the flames back in Ireland a bit more. And look, people have an issue with Ian talking about I love Florida or I love Brazil and representing Brazil and all this kind of stuff. But there's also like the hang up on MMA in Ireland because of the shadow cast by Conor McGregor and the many controversies he's had since 2017. That culminated with the civil sexual assault case with Nikita Hand. Like that has changed the way people see Conor, and the knock-on effect is MMA. Ian had a great press conference the other day in Ireland. I believe he is a new face for the sport here. I think he is a much better face for the sport right now. I would love to see him get that opportunity. But one thing that is different from Conor when Conor was Conor and Ian is Ian now is, and this is because he doesn't train in Ireland and he's not associated with the guys, is Conor McGregor fucking bigged everyone up. What did he used to say? He said, I'll give you hand ups, but no handouts. Like, I will put you in the spot if you're my teammate. I will do everything I can to get you there. And that was part of his magic. He was happy to put Kyle Pendred over Paddy Hoolan, Aisling Daly, Gunny Nelson was already in there, but even Neil Seary, guys from different teams. It was just a magic, magic moment, and he was a brilliant leader of that movement. I'd love to see Ian do a bit more of that, but look, he's been away from Ireland. He doesn't really have great ties ever since he left Team KF, but I think he is a great face for the sport right now, and if he beats Islam on August 15th, I would love to see him get more coverage. It's just, MMA is a bit of a taboo in Ireland at the moment, and that's very sad because I feel like I worked very hard to get it into a prominent space in the media as well. Obviously not as much as McGregor and Kavanaugh and all those guys work, but it's tough to see it now. Like, Ian fights and no coverage at all really in the mainstream outlets and the in the newspapers, things like that. And yeah, I hope so too. I would love to see that, and I would love it for Irish MMA. Petey, 38, just bought a Switch to play FIFA. No shame. Thank you. I'm also 38.
Yeah.
I'm also 38, you know?
This is what you need. You need the support of your peers.
If someone like...
If you're all doing it.
If someone like you is sitting beside me and you're giving me a snide eye, I'm just not opening it. I'm just going to be like, I'm going to read the book. All right?
It's a great book, but I think, you know, you'll blaze through it pretty quickly. It's a quick read. So I don't know if it's going to get you all the way to Las Vegas for this one. You're going to want that Switch at some point. Just put it out of your mind. Who cares what these people think? They might be judging you, but a part of that judgment, please know, is jealousy. They're thinking, that does sound like a great way to kill some time.
I wonder how many... That's another thing I'm interested in, right? Like, I haven't been to a McGregor fight in Las Vegas since he fought Diaz the second time? No, sorry, Cerrone, 2020. But like, then, right, it was already changed. Even Habib, I wasn't at that fight. Phil and Noel were over there. Noel McGrath and Phil O'Connor were over there. And they were like, it's just a lot of Americans in green t-shirts. You know, like you're not getting a lot of the Irish. But when I was going from 2014 to 2016, starting with the Poirier fight to that second Diaz fight, you were getting on the plane and everybody was there to be at the fight.
Yeah.
Like, it was fucking crazy, you know?
I was at, I think it was the Chad Mendes one, where the morning after I went out the back door of my hotel and there were some Irish guys drunk, had clearly been up all night. One of them asked me what the fuck I was looking at, and then he threw up.
Yeah.
Right after asking me that. And I went, do I have to say it? I'm looking at you. How do I not look at you right now? You're throwing up on the pavement out here in Las Vegas. Brother, I don't know what else you want me to say. But you're right. The scene had changed. I'll say the last time I was there was for that second Dustin Poirier fight, or I guess the third Dustin Poirier fight overall, where he broke his leg. The thing I remember about it was the first time I went anywhere really after the pandemic, because it was like,
yeah,
you know, we've been sort of locked down. The vaccines came out. There was a time where after the vaccines came out where everybody went, we're bulletproof now. Let's get out there. Let's party. And I went to Las Vegas that summer to cover that fight. And it was a madhouse. It was just like so packed everywhere you went. There was a mood in the air of everybody just being like, the plague is over. We are partying and kissing each other in the streets now and coughing on each other's drinks with a reckless abandon. Don't care. And it was a moment for me where I was in these like big groups going around and I was like, wait a minute, I don't feel like I was great in crowds before. I feel like maybe I got worse during the pandemic. You get used to just only seeing like, you know, 4 or 5 people. And yeah. Then next thing you know, you're in Vegas with like every idiot in the world. And suddenly I was just like, I think that maybe my social abilities have taken a hit during this pandemic.
Man, it's kind of, you have to learn how to be like a friendly person again, didn't you? Like, I can remember.
Just got really used to being at home, you know?
When queues came back, remember you used to have them socially distant queues? When it just went back to queues and you're like, these people are awfully close to me. I don't know how comfortable I am with this. But yeah, crazy. Fucking crazy times. Yeah, so I'm going to see next week how... Like, I do feel like that's nearly a weakness for me covering this card, having come from that. Do you get me as a journalist? Like, you're going in, it's nearly like... It was the most magical time maybe in the UFC when that was happening. And now you're like, everyone's really excited and you're trying to like convey that excitement too. But I just have a feeling it's going to be so different that I'm going to be kind of bummed out. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Well, I mean, maybe gauge your like adjust your expectations, because you can't go home again. You're not going to show up and it's going to be suddenly 2016 all over again. Those days aren't coming back. It'll just be a new thing. So lean into that. Throw $20 down on black at the roulette table for me and, you know, have a good time.
I will do that. I'll send you a video. Could you allow to take a video while you're doing that? Because I'll do
probably
it.
Probably not.
Okay, well.
Probably. They didn't seem to love it when Colby Covington was doing it.
You can take, well, there was other reasons for that. But listen, everybody, my beautiful American friends, have a wonderful July 4th. Congratulations, America. 250. Fantastic. I cannot wait to be in you next week, America. Have a lovely time. I love you all. Thank you to Andy. Thank you to Ben. Thank you to Oscar Losef. Jordan, nowhere to be seen. Chuck, nowhere to be seen. But we love you. Mwah.